Hey listeners, KJ here. Before we launch into the episode, I get to tell you about how our sponsor, Author Accelerator, has really ramped up their book coach coaching. Book coach coaching? Absolutely. Book coaches might indeed be born, they say editors are, but they are also made. And Author Accelerator has an amazing program that helps passionate readers and writers master the art of this side gig, as well as a business course, to help coaches turn it into a full-time endeavor. You'll find all the info, as well as a free video series to help you decide if book coaching is right for you, at bookcoaches.com/amwriting.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two.
I'm KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting, the podcast about writing all the things, fiction, nonfiction, short pieces, long pieces, pitches, proposals, brief emails to your editor, anything. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting your writing work done. I am, as I think I already said, KJ Dell'Antonia. I am the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, which will be out in December of 2020, or possibly later than that. And also of, the book How to Be a Happier Parent. I am the former editor of the Motherload blog at the New York Times, where I'm still a sometimes contributor, and that's me.
I'm Jess Leahy. I am the co-host of KJ Dell'Antonia. You know, that's my primary job in life, is to be KJ's co-host. I am also the author of The Gift of Failure, How the Best Parents Learn to Let Go So Their Children Can Succeed, and a new book on preventing substance abuse in kids called The Addiction Inoculation, out in April 2021. And currently, I seem to be writing the most stuff for The Washington Post and Airmail. We have a really interesting guest today. We talk a lot about, you know, we do the line between publishing and traditional publishing and self-publishing. And I was interviewed recently on a podcast that was really fascinating and we'll get into in just a minute. And one of the hosts of that podcast has kind of an interesting publishing story that I wanted to dive into just a little bit. Today, we are talking to Dara Kurtz. She is the author of a couple of books. First of all, let's start with the podcast. She co-hosts a podcast called Thrive the Podcast with Garth and Dara. Garth is Garth Callahan, and he is the author of the book Napkin Notes. He's the Napkin Notes dad. It's kind of a cool story. He writes notes for his daughter notes for his daughter on napkins when he was diagnosed with cancer. And Dara has also had cancer, and so they wanted to talk a little bit about this thriving through cancer sort of situation. She's also the author of the book Crush Cancer, both the book and the workbook, and that is self-published, and we will be talking about that a little bit. And she has a new book that is, quote, traditionally published. I'm going to be interested to see if these terms ever change, called I Am My Mother's Daughter. Darth, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So you had an interesting story that I didn't know about until we got talking after you interviewed me for your podcast, which was a hoot, by the way. Garth is hysterical.
It was so fun.
He has stories. That man has stories.
He does. Sometimes I know. And I'm like, Garth, speed it up, buddy.
So you have written two books. One book was self-published, and I'd love to talk about how that came to be. And then you published a second book that's traditionally published, and you had talked about the fact that there was an interim in there where you wanted to traditionally publish, but you knew that there was sort of this, there are gatekeepers to traditional publishing, a topic I think I really want to sort of get into more deeply. And that has to do with your social media presence and your, quote, platform and all of that sort of stuff. So that's what I want to talk about, the decision to do one versus the other. And if your decision is to do traditional publishing, sort of how that path went for you and how you got there. So let's start at the beginning with the traditionally published book and how that went and why you traditionally published it and what that experience was like.
So the book that I traditionally published, which is about to be released, I Am My Mother's Daughter, Wisdom on Life, Loss, and Love, is something that I wasn't ever planning on writing. It just sort of happened, and it was just such a beautiful opportunity for me to just sort of kind of just sit down, write the whole book. And it really, and based on because of an unexpected discovery of a Ziploc bag of letters that I found, they were written to me from my mom and my grandmothers, and unfortunately all three of those women had passed away. And I found this Ziploc bag of letters that had been written to me really from the time I was 9 years old until I graduated from college. And I just sat one night and finally had the courage to open the bag of letters and read these words written from the women who loved and raised me. And I was blown away by the relevance and the wisdom that the letters contained. And I really felt like I was having a conversation with my mom. And it's been 20 years since she passed away. And it's been really one of the greatest challenges of my life, is just learning to live in the world without her. And so I felt like there was a book there, but I didn't really have any idea how it was going to kind of transpire. So I just sat down and I just started writing. And I spent probably about 5 or 6 months just writing the book every day. There were times that I would be sitting in my sunroom sobbing, writing. It was just an unbelievably healing process for me, but also such a joyful process. And at the end of it, I had this manuscript, which was completely different from the way I did Crush Cancer, which we'll talk about in a second. So I had the manuscript completely done, and I had built my Crazy Perfect Life platform and on Facebook and social media and stuff. And I had been kind of building that, which I had learned from the Crush Cancer experience. And so, but I didn't want it to be hard. I didn't want it to be kind of this process like Crush Cancer was, where it kind of sucked all the joy out of the whole entire experience. And so I said to myself one day, I'm just going to kind of see if I can do this by myself. And I have a literary agent. She's a nonfiction literary agent in New York. She's really just a beautiful person, but I just wanted it to kind of be simple.
Can I stop you for a second? So when you say it, are you talking about the process of selling the book?
Yes, the process of selling the book. Yes.
Okay.
The process of getting the proposal together, selling the book. You know, that's such a lengthy process. And
yeah, no, believe me, I think the process for my last book, you know, from start to finish really was a year.
Yeah, it's a year. And I had, you know, I had done so much with Crush Cancer. And so I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to see if I can do this myself. I Googled 10 smaller publishers that I felt I would be really happy with, and I emailed them. I worked really hard on my, you know, the email that I was going to send, blah, blah, blah. And I ended up getting 4 offers, and I went with the publisher, and of course I did my homework. Of course I researched all of these different places before I even did that. But I went with the publisher that I felt would give me a lot of attention. And it has been such a beautiful and amazing experience. I have a partner. We are working together, especially right now with a book launch in the middle of a pandemic. But every day, like the marketing aspects, I mean, we're working together. And I am so thankful that I went down this path.
You know, some people, when they talk about smaller publishers, there's that question of, okay, well, if it's a smaller publisher, are they going to have the resources to get my book out there and do all of that sort of stuff? But on the other hand, many friends of mine are with smaller publishers, and they said, you know, I really felt like I had a close relationship with my publisher because I was part of a smaller entity. There wasn't like this huge, you know, I've been very fortunate with HarperCollins, but HarperCollins is huge. Yeah. And I can completely see that you could just feel lost in this giant behemoth. So it's really lovely to hear that your experience has been good. When you say you Googled smaller publishers, was it easy to, what do you Google? I mean, do you just
I'm looking for smaller. I mean, I feel like I've gotten really good at kind of digging around online, like sort of knowing how to find information, look at, and also like I looked at a lot of the books that I like and noticed that a lot of those books, a lot of them have been published by smaller publishers. And so I just kind of made a list and just sort of went down the list and didn't hear back from all of them, got rejected from some of them. But, you know, at the end of the day, I felt really good about the way it played out. Did I get probably as big of a advance as I would have gotten at a bigger publisher? No, I did not. But that wasn't really my priority. My priority was producing a book that I felt would be something that I would absolutely be proud of, but that also I could have a hand and sort of someone would hear my thoughts on it as we were kind of going through it. And, you know, at the end of the day, I would do it again exactly the way we did it.
Well, and I have to say, from my perspective, looking at the, because when I got when I got a copy of your book, I also got sort of the insert that publicists at publishing houses sort of insert inside the book so that you have both an idea of where the, what the author's all about and what topics they can talk about. And from a PR perspective, you know, it's a really well done insert. So it wasn't like I would look at this and say, oh, this is coming from a smaller press. This was really well done, and it looked like they did a great job. With a smaller, so what I'm really, really interested in, though, is the transition from what you did in order to have, as a self-published author, what you did in order to feel like you were really ready from a platform, from a social, from a whatever sort of perspective, not just from the, you know, I did all my research on the publishers, but how did you get to the point where you felt like you had a package ready to go with a proposal for a book to say, look, I am going to be capable of helping you sell this book?
That is such a great question. So let's back up for a few minutes. So I was a financial advisor, and about 6.5 years ago, I went through breast cancer. And at the end of that journey, I thought, I am done with being a financial advisor. I really want to be a writer. I've always wanted to be a writer, and I wanted to really kind of find my voice. And so I started my blog, Crazy Perfect Life, because I knew that I wanted to eventually write books. So I started Crazy Perfect Life, and I really worked hard on social media and just kind of building that platform. And that sort of transpired into me writing Crush Cancer. So when I did the Crush Cancer book, I had a literary agent in New York, the same literary agent that I still have. And
can I stop you for a second and ask about, so from the very beginning, how did you acquire that agent? Like, how did you go about finding your agent? How did you go
totally
about-
totally exhausting. I mean, you know, not fun. So exhausting. You know, again, doing a ton of research, figuring out who they are, emailing them, getting rejected, emailing them, getting rejected. I mean, that is such a lengthy process in itself. And if you're someone who just like really loves writing, you're taking up a lot of your time that you would be writing, looking, querying, you know, trying to contact agents and going through that. So
wait, it's KJ, and I have a question. So what were you querying the agents with? Did you have an idea for the book at this point?
No, I had a proposal.
You had a full proposal.
Yeah. So at that time, I had done my Crush Cancer proposal. And again, I felt like my proposal was in really good shape. It was, you can find the way that nonfiction proposals should be online. So I kind of done that. And I had a really good nonfiction proposal completely, I thought, done. What I didn't have is I didn't have someone famous who had committed to writing the foreword. I didn't have that. And so when I queried the literary agents, I said, I've got my beautiful proposal ready to be sent to you. And at that time, my social media platform really, I think, was over 100,000 in terms of the number of followers that I had. And so I
on what platform was Facebook, that? Facebook?
Okay. Probably really combined Facebook and Instagram, you know, that kind of thing. Okay. So I felt like I was in a pretty good shape, and they were pretty active at the time. Facebook's done a lot of changes between then and now, and so I think people were more actively able to see posts that you make on Facebook back in the day before now, where you really have to kind of boost your post to get people to even see it in their feed.
Well, that would actually was going to be part of my question, was how You often, for example, Serena has great Facebook recognition mainly because of word of mouth, and romance readers talk a lot to each other about what books they like and that sort of thing. How did you build that? I mean, 100,000 followers or 100,000 on various platforms is fantastic. How did you get to that?
I mean, I was working so hard every single day on growing my social media platforms. And I had kind of met a lot of people really from across the world who had their own platforms, and we had sharing agreements, if you will.
Interesting.
Yeah, I probably had about 20 to 25 sharing agreements with different pages from around the world.
Could you talk a little bit for our listeners who may not know what that means? Sure. Could you explain that?
So, and this was about 6 years ago. So it's a little bit different, but about 6 years ago, when if a big page shared a post that I posted on Crazy Perfect Life, that's my Facebook page, then it would get a lot of traction, and then I would get followers because people would like the post, and then they would think, okay, I'm going to follow this page. It's changed a lot now, and so I think it's a lot harder to grow your Facebook page through shared arrangements. And so I really don't do that as much anymore, really, because I feel like I have a pretty good Facebook following now. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, it took a lot of time. So the way I started,
is that on your personal page or on a group?
No, it's on my Crazy Perfect Life page.
Okay, gotcha.
So I would email, like, let's say there's a page that I liked. I emailed that page, like I sent a message. Oh, I love your page. You know, I'm Dara, creator of Crazy Perfect Life. I would love to do a shared. Are you interested in sharing? I'll share one of your posts each week. You share one of mine.
Ah, yes.
And so I had about 25 of those shared agreements back in the day. And so, I mean, I actually had like a schedule, you know, of what times I was posting and what pages I was posting, and pages were sharing my stuff. And so it was really, really helping me grow the page. And that's how I grew the page, really, from starting to where it is now. So I felt like when I went to the literary agent, you know, I got my literary agent, I had my proposal, I felt like I was in pretty good shape. And so she, you know, we cleaned up the proposal a little bit. She really, my literary agent, wanted me to try to find someone famous to write the foreword. So I
actually, at some point, I did. We have to talk about that on the podcast, getting someone famous to write your foreword, because there's such pros and cons to that. And I didn't mean to go off the rails, but that's going on my mental checklist of things we've got to talk about.
It just depends. Again, you know, that wasn't even something that came up with the I Am a Mother's Daughter book that I just did.
Yeah.
So she took the book out. She pitched Crush Cancer out, and we ended up, you know, getting lots of comments. Love her voice. Love the writing. But the shelf is too crowded. There's too many cancer books.
Yeah.
You know, this is just something that isn't really, in terms of the saleability of the book, not where we want to go. And my favorite reject that we heard a lot was, she's not famous. And so at the end of the day, after spending all of that time and, you know, the emotional part of just like being so close to getting picked up by a traditional publisher, like so close, that after that whole experience, and my literary agent said, you know what, Dara, we've tried. There's nothing I can do. I'm happy to kind of revisit it, and we can keep the book on my list. And so, you know, as I'm meeting with editors and such, it's still on my list. We can do that. But after that, I thought, you know what? I just really want this book out there. I know it can help people. And I really wanted to sort of start growing my speaking. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be able to kind of grow that platform. So that's when I made the decision to ditch my ego and there's a lot there. I mean, that's a hard decision when you really want so much to get published, and then to say, okay, I'm going to just swallow my pride and I'm going to find a way to self-publish it.
Well, and it's not just about swallowing your pride. It's a huge learning curve. I mean, that's why we've asked Serena so many times to talk about, you know, the actual nuts and bolts. Like, people want to talk on a really granular level. Like, wait a second. Like, is there a button you hit that says, publish my book now, please? Because it's such a complicated endeavor. So that's a big undertaking to not only push your ego down a little bit, but also say, okay, now I have a lot to learn. But I was going to say before, you know, it's not for nothing that the word planner was in your job description, because clearly you are, you are a consummate planner. And that's one thing I really appreciate about your story, is that you always had your eyes on a much larger prize than, you know, for this book, it was number one, getting it out there. And I love that you also created a workbook for the book, because that's a whole other avenue, a whole other, you know, audience in addition to the book itself. And that's something, you know, we see with, you know, even like Benjamin Dreyer's book on about writing. He has now Stet, the game. He's got a calendar. You know, Gretchen Rubin did her happiness project, and then she came out with a calendar and a workbook and a planner and all those things. So that's a really interesting approach, to say, okay, I've self-published this thing and I have this material. How else? Serena's a big fan of, you know, using all the material you can in as many ways as you can and coming up with that other self-published thing. So, you know, kudos to you for not only having the ability to push down your ego, but also to say, it's important, I need to get this out there and I have some work to do.
I want to come back and talk about the Facebook page, because I've just been sitting here scrolling through it while I was in silence. And you've really gone all in on the sort of power woman inspiration Facebook page, personal life, you know, there to share with people. And you said you had a schedule and you've had all of those things. And I don't know, I just want to talk about how you went through the process of being like, okay, these are the things that are going to work to engage my Facebook audience. How did you find those things? And how did you put getting all that out there sort of into your life?
So when I was trying to build my platform, and I consider growing my Facebook page building my platform.
Yep.
And it's really not, I mean, now I don't post as much as I did back in the day when I had all those shared relationships. And, you know, now with really focusing on I Am My Mother's Daughter, just in the marketing for that, I'm definitely probably not posting even as much as I should be on that. But it was part of my, daily job, if you will, to focus on my Facebook page and really trying to look at other pages that I admired and maybe wanted to be like and have the type of engagement that they had, and also just the ability and, you know, the willingness to say, okay, I'm trying this, and if it doesn't work, I'm gonna look back in a couple weeks and say, okay, that didn't work, I'm going to try something different. So, I mean, I've always been willing to try new things, and what's the worst that can happen? It doesn't work out. Okay, so it doesn't work out. And then you try something else. And I mean, I've definitely made a lot of mistakes. If I was kind of starting this whole thing today, I probably wouldn't do exactly what I did. I would probably tweak it, because, you know, you learn. The more you do, the more you learn. But I kind of look at everything as sort of a ladder, and, you know, starting my platform and growing the Facebook page and everything, that was like maybe the bottom of the ladder. And then self-publishing Crush Cancer, that was like maybe another step up the ladder. And that's what really helped my speaking gig. And that's when I was really able to start getting speaking engagements. And nobody asked, Dara, who's your publisher? I mean, that never came up. They just thought, Dara, you have a great book and a workbook. We'd love for you to come and speak. And so, you know, I looked at that as kind of another step. And now with I Am My Mother's Daughter, you know, that's another step. At the end of the day, would I love for HarperCollins to, you know, knock on my door? Of course. But I'm just each project learning more, willing to put myself out there, take risks, and I look at it as just another step.
And it sounds like you paused to take the time to look at how successful that your effort has been. So you don't just throw things out at Facebook and then throw something else out there the next week. And it sounds like you're really looking at, you know, well, is this particular piece of effort helping me move forward towards my goals?
Yeah, and that's a really big point, because it's so easy to compare yourself to other people. And it's so easy to think, well, they're doing that. Should I be doing that? But, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to ask yourself, what's my why? Like, what is it? What are my goals? What do I want to be doing? What makes sense for my life? And so there were definitely times when I would look at people and I would think, okay, they're doing this. I definitely need to be doing this. And then I would think, you know what, Dara? It's okay that you're not doing that. You don't want, that's not your end goal. You don't want to be doing that. And so there were times when I had to say, like, okay, it's not, I don't have to do what everyone is doing. You know, I think I finally gave myself permission to sort of accept what I was putting out and feel really good about what I was doing and not comparing myself to other people. But it wasn't, I mean, that's probably been the biggest hurdle for myself, is just comparing myself to others throughout this whole journey.
Can I ask what you were using as knowing what you did for a living and knowing Serena Bowen, our co-host, the way I do? I'm assuming you were using analytics of some sort in there to figure this thing out. Well, in terms of knowing what works and what doesn't, were you looking at, like, oh, wow, I gained a whole bunch of new likes and followers for my Facebook page based on this particular thing I did? How were you gauging what good engagement was?
I was definitely using, like, the Facebook analytics that you can, okay, you know, just look at on your page. You can look at the growth, and mm-hmm, you can look at the engagement and the reach. It you can look at all of those different numbers. And so I was looking, gotcha, at that. But mostly I was just kind of looking at, okay, I posted something. How did it do? Did it get a lot of shares? Were people, mm-hmm, liking it? Were they commenting? Were they messaging me about it? That kind,
gotcha,
of thing. And you know, that was what I really enjoyed about it, is the whole connection with other people and helping other people and really kind of getting those texts and getting those emails and the messages. And so that really, I was trying to kind of listen to what people were asking for. And the same with my email list. I was trying to kind of pay attention to, okay, this is how many people opened that email. And I could tell they liked it, or no, mm-hmm, that wasn't getting a lot of traffic. So that those types of things, mm-hmm, definitely have helped me.
I have taken so many notes. I'm sitting here with like a list of things that have been really, really helpful for me. But I have to say, I think the thing that's been most reassuring to me and has been a really nice reminder for me is that idea of what's my why. Because KJ and I have talked about this in the past, like every once in a while you get that, like, oh, look, she put her entire family in an RV and took them across the country. And oh my gosh, why am I not doing that? And then we both go, because we would hate that. That's not what we want for our family. That's not my why. So I love the idea that you knew you had this thing that would be helpful for people. The why is there, and the how you get it out there really becomes your question. And I like the fact that you're willing to tweak your approach based on what you find is engaging your audience. And really, that's what it comes down to for all of us. You know, what is what we're putting out there? And I do have to say also that as many bad things as I can say about Facebook, the groups and the page, you know, when you find your audience on Facebook and you find a good community space, whether that's, you know, your page or that's our hashtag AmWriting Facebook group, it can be such a gift to so many people and to us. I mean, that's also where we find a lot of interesting material for future podcasts. So I just love your approach to this.
So After I definitely published Crush Cancer, and I didn't do that by myself. I mean, it was self-published, but I hired someone to help me do that. Because I would say, if you're thinking about self-publishing, just make sure that the product, whatever you do, make sure the product that you put out is as good a quality as it can be, regardless of whether or not it's self-published or if it's with a smaller publisher or a big publisher. I mean, that was something that was really important to me, is that the quality was as good as it could be. And so I did, you know, hire someone to help me with that. And I don't regret that at all, because I don't think that my speaking, my you know, my growing my speaking platform would have happened if I didn't have that book. And, you know, it's kind of one of those catch-22s, because a big publisher wants you to have a big platform and they want you to have a kind of a speaking platform. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of ways, you need the book in order to start getting hired to do the speeches. And so, you know, it's kind of like a circle. And so yeah. I would say for anyone who's wanting to get out there and the traditional publishing route really isn't helping you, the self-publishing really is such a beautiful way for you to have control over, really kind of take control over your destiny and, you know, start doing whatever it is you want to be doing, because nobody ever asks you who your publisher is when they're considering hiring you for a gig. I mean, that has never come up ever.
So when you say you hired someone to help you with that, did you hire one person or entity who could help with everything, the cover, the editing, all of that thing? Or did you sort of paste together a lot of different people to help you make the book the best that it could be?
No, I went and hired, they're called Publish Pros, and it's a mm-hmm. team of two guys, and they helped me, and I would recommend them to anyone. They did a great job, and they also helped me with the cover design and then a little bit with the marketing as well.
Right. And how did you do the marketing? Did you focus on your people and your email and your Facebook and let it grow from there?
Yeah. So I've learned so much from that experience that I'm now using and I am my mother's daughter.
Right.
That's a whole nother lesson. It's just as we grow and as we do new things, we learn and then we're able to maybe do it better. So I can look back and think, gosh, I should have done da 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 when we did Crush Cancer, or I could have done it this way, but I just didn't know to do it. So, I definitely used my email list and my Facebook page and really reached out to a lot of cancer groups, nonprofit groups. I mean, at the end of the day, I think whether or not you are self-publishing or with a small publisher or even a big publisher, the author is going to play a huge role in the success of the book in terms of the marketing. And so you have to be willing to kind of put yourself out there and reach out to people and ask if you can write blog posts or ask if you can be on their podcast or, you know, whatever it is. Ask if you can speak at their events and be willing to hear no. And because it's just, you know, as they say, one step closer to a yes.
Absolutely.
And I think being a financial advisor definitely helped me in that regard, because I was used to hearing people say no to me. And so that didn't really faze me. I'm fine asking for something and then someone's, what's the worst that can happen? They say no. Okay, so they say no, then I just move forward. And so I think you've got to be willing to hear no if you want to be successful.
That is, I think that's a real challenge for a lot of our listeners and for a lot of people. And I love that you put it that way. So, well, one thing we're not going to say no to is hearing what you have been reading. But before we get on to that next section of the podcast, let's take a quick moment to hear from a sponsor. Writers, it's KJ, taking a quick pause to tell you about our new sponsor, Dabble Writing Software. We invited Dabble to join the #AmWriting team because we're in love with the plotting tools and the intuitive interface. But here's something else I love about it, what they call the focus fade. Any details that are open in the sidebars of your Dabble document fade away automatically as you write, leaving you with nothing but a beautiful clear space to work in until you need them and send your cursor in that direction when they're back in a flash. It's so cool. I barely even realized it was happening the first time I noticed it until I suddenly tuned in and realized I'd been chugging along in a great distraction-free writing environment. Find out more and do a free trial at dabblewriter.com.
All right, it is time to talk about what we've been reading. Dara, do you have anything you'd like to, any books you'd like to talk about? Been reading anything good?
So when I read, which I, of course, read all the time, I don't read just one book at a time. I have like at least 5 books going, depending upon.
Me too.
Yeah, I love that because it totally depends on the mood that I'm in when I am, you know, if it's during the day or mostly I read at night before I go to bed. But it just sort of depends on what I'm looking for at that moment. So I love that you do that too. Sometimes people are like, what is the weirdest thing I've ever heard?
Oh, no, I often, five is about, for me, it's at like four. I usually have like four different things at different stages and I'll circle back to things and stuff like that. Yeah, so I'm totally in there with you.
So you're going to laugh, but I'm actually reading I Am My Mother's Daughter because I'm doing so many podcasts right now and it's just, I felt like I wanted to revisit it. So I'm actually enjoying that. I'm trying to read it from the not think, okay, maybe I should have changed that sentence or, you know, tweaked that a little bit. I'm just trying to kind of read it and be present and just kind of enjoy the book. And so I'm doing that right now. But another book that I'm really enjoying, and I'm rereading this as well, is called The Untethered Soul, The Journey Beyond Yourself by Michael Singer. And it's such a great book. It really talks a lot about just how to free yourself from limitations and soar beyond your boundaries. And just with everything going on in the world right now with the coronavirus and, you know, sort of the anxiety that I've been feeling because of the virus and all that, this was just kind of a book that I felt like I wanted to revisit. And it's just a beautiful book. I encourage anyone who likes self-help books to check it out, The Untethered Soul.
We're big book revisitors. So yeah, it's a comfort. Did you want to say something, KJ?
I said, yep. That we are indeed big book revisitors. Agreed. Let's make that point.
I had kind of a dry spell with books there for a little bit. And I returned a couple of books and I was bummed out. And then all of a sudden I got on this great jag. I got on a couple of really good books. So I wanted to talk about two and they're very different. Speaking of having different books for different moods. So one of them is This Is All I Got by Lauren Sandler. And this is a book about it's such a cool thing. She's a reporter and she went in as a journalist to talk to a woman, a single mom at a shelter just as an investigation into whether or not a single mother can make it and find a place to live, like actually make it out of a shelter and into an actual home based on the supports, quote unquote supports, that we have in place as a society for people like that. And it's a fascinating story. It's also a really interesting investigation into where the line is for a journalist. I mean, if she is white, her subject is Hispanic. She has means, her subject does not. Where do you help? You know, at one point, Lauren's kids were angry with her that she wasn't offering their couch up to this woman and her child. Like, how could you not do that? And she had explained to them that as a journalist, her job is to tell this person's story. And it was just a really interesting investigation and who gets to tell stories and how much you intervene in the story that you're telling. It was really interesting for me. And then the other book that I am absolutely in love with, and this book I'm reading is just one of those inspirational books. Someone introduced me to the book A Beautiful Work in Progress by Myrna Valerio. And Myrna Valerio has been featured on, she was on the cover of Runner's World. She's been on so many different things. She is a Black larger woman who is an endurance ultra athlete. And she is all about, you know, the body that you have and how it works for you and being proud of it and making it work to the best of its abilities. And she's just this cool, funny. She's made me laugh out loud. I've been listening to it as I do chores outside and I am loving it. So Myrna Valerio, she is a hoot, A Beautiful Work in Progress. That is her approach to her body and her life. And I needed that approach right now. KJ, what have you been reading?
Well, that sounds really excellent.
Yeah, it's really
good. You know
good.
What I've been reading because the minute I put it down, I texted you and told you that you and your partner, Tim, would love it. So I have been reading The Beauty in Breaking by Michelle Harper. She is an ER doc and a VA ER doc during the course of the book. She's somebody who survived a really traumatic childhood. She's exploring what it means to look different than a lot of your fellow doctors, but similar to a lot of your patients when you work in an ER and in the VA. And it is just, it's a beautifully written, we're going to use the word beautiful frequently in this in this booky thing, but it's beautifully written and literary and yet a complete and total page turner and very fast read.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And what was funny about it is I tweeted that chapter 5, which is a really cool story, should be required reading for all medical students. And I started to tell Tim, my husband, who's a physician, about this chapter. And he said, I've read this. It was apparently also, this chapter was an early version of the chapter, I guess, was in a medical journal as a story, or he read it in that context.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because it's about medical ethics, and it's about the law, and it's about being othered, and because she is Black, and she was being questioned by, you know, people that she was superior to who are white. And it was a fascinating look at all of these things and how they all work together. And it was really cool because he's like, wait, I know that story. I've read that. Yeah. So anyway, I highly recommend it too. Yep. This has been
great.
Such a great conversation. I'm so impressed with, you know, your plotting and planning and work and how you invested into, you know, each step in your journey. And I'm really impressed. I'm just really impressed by all of it.
Thank you. That means a lot. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you for interviewing me. And I have to say, speaking of asking for things, you were the one who asked if you could talk on our podcast about this particular topic. And I was like, well, okay, yes. So for those of you out there who are like, oh, I don't know, I feel uncomfortable asking for things, you have to go out there. And remember when you said during this podcast, you said, would I like it if HarperCollins came and knocked on my door? They're not going to knock on your door. You have to go to their door and claw at the door until someone lets you in.
Exactly.
So thank you for asking us if you could come and talk about this. That's the first step to getting your stories out there. So thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you both so much. I really appreciate you having me today.
Absolutely. And until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop.
Stop.
Thank you.